Mr. Cheeseman, Reel 33. You wanted to go back to Beni Yusuf with some other memories.
Yes, I missed out some couple of important points when the first time when we left Mirza Matriu with having been handed the tanks back to the original battalion, got on the train at Mirza Matriu, took us through down to Beni Yusuf, where we were re-equipped with the American Honey tank. Now, I've already said that. Now, at that particular time, there's two efforts which I ought to tell you, and that is, whilst I was at Beni Yusuf, quite apart from what I told you on the tape there, I went down with my first dose of malaria. I had four such doses, actually. My first dose of malaria. All I can remember about it is it was I felt awful in the morning, and by lunchtime I went and lay down in the tent, and by midday I was pinching everybody's blankets to keep warm, and then I know nothing until I was in hospital. Now the hospital was a hotel which had been changed into a hospital in a suburb of Cairo, Heliopolis, and it rather reminded me of the Alhambra, you know, the Granada, the tight one, you know, the pointed shaped arches and what have you. And I can remember I'd obviously been taken without my paybook, and they whipped me away as quickly as possible, because when I sort of came to again, the old sister said, "Ah, now then, we understand your name is Cheeseman, can we have your army number?" And for the first time and the only time in life, I couldn't remember it. Well, that was, you know, how about it? Anyway, they didn't know what was up with me. And they'd done various efforts to check out and things like that, and they thought I had, they'd put me down as effort syndrome. Now, I always thought that was something which is derogatory, as it were, but with a very, very high temperature and sweating like it was, I couldn't put that on, as it were. But they did eventually find out that it was malaria I had. And getting well on that, I remember an occasion, you understand these hotel rooms were not very big, only about two or possibly three beds in each room. It was quite a pleasant place in Sunny. And I always remember the paper boy, of course that was an Egyptian boy with these long robes and whatever. And he come in and instead of saying papers, as you would expect, he said, "Anybody want one? Anybody want one?" And I said, "It was the paper, of course it's I forget the name of the Egyptian paper, to put it in English and things like that. And I really had a quite a pleasant time. I'll be in there 10 days or something like that.
What was the treatment?
Oh, it quinine. Those days. I know later on they did experiment on me, and I don't know what the tablets were, but the point was that the chemical in these tablets, you required, I think, 6 tablets, and if you could keep them down for more than an hour or a half an hour, then your body had assimilated that amount of chemical that's required. But you couldn't keep them down. So when they got these 6 tablets, they put a stopwatch on you. And in 10 minutes' time, up would it come, say, "All right, you've only got another 20 minutes, take another 6. And so, you know, all like that. And that happened about 4 times a day. Well, the treatment was killing people, you know. They talk these days about the Gulf War heroes being experimented. Of course they were experimented on. We were. Believe me, medical science jumped ahead in leaps and bounds. So that's the one good thing about war, that our kiddies and that are benefiting from the treatment that was tried out on us, you know. There was umpteen But I'm digressing here.
Was the treatment given orally or injections?
No, orally. I didn't have any injections. They took a blood sample, and on one occasion they did a sternum puncture to get a sample of my marrow to see, you know, what sort of malaria or whatever it is. But, a medical man will know more about that.
Had you been warned about malaria and taking safeguards?
When we got to Ben Yusuf, by the way, the tents, the tropical tents, with the, you know, the installation, what have you, they'd been lowered into the ground as an area precaution. And in fact, of course, running sand, the walls of the tent, right down the eaves, by the way, and where the canvas walls would be was a brick wall. And those bricks were made of straw and mud, just the same as they did in the Bible. And full crevices where crickets would get. And being on the fitters, we used to take the drone out and burn them out, so otherwise you can get the seedlings. Brick, brick, brick. But everyone there had, every single soldier in Beni Yusuf had a mosquito on it, and one must have been inside my neck one night. They all said, "Don't get one inside your neck, just bring it off over here." When he stops, you feel a sting in your arm. Do that, you've got him.
But coming to the desert for the very first time, were you put under tablets to take daily in case of malaria?
No.
So these were early days before that was operating.
Yeah. We didn't even have salt tablets. Nothing. We were tough as a board and all of this. Anyway, that was the one incident I wanted. The other thing is this, that I said we got equipped with the American honey tank, as we called it. We also got, I think, about 10 or a dozen American NCOs. Now, what about this for a violation of the Geneva Convention? America's not in the war yet. And they came over principally to get war experience, to go back to be instructors, and also tell us how to repair and teach us about the tanks. Well, I'm sorry, but we taught them how to repair and maintain a tank. Well, I mean, we were mechanically trained and what have you, and it was strange as well. But, and then what the man had said was just a glorified mangle. There was nothing, you know, highly technical like the Crusader. And we actually taught, and they were surprised at how we used to be knocking on more about it than we do, buddy, you know. That's all fair enough. You know, crew, very friendly, things like that. And of course, I think there were two tank crews. Now, that meant that British men didn't have to be there. In other words, the battalion was two tank crews short because of the Americans there. And they took over. They actually were part and parcel of the headquarters squadron. So, before we went up the desert, it seemed as though running, doesn't it? It must have been, it sounded like there was 100 of them, because everywhere you went, boy, I can't wait to get up the desert and show these jerrys just who flew around here. And we said, yes, we can put the thought goes out. We know you, and put like us, you'll learn, you know. And it was all okay, we accepted it. But you know, off the desert, Battle of Sidi Rezegh, I was forever repairing damaged American crew on tanks. Sabotage. Now, I'm going to tell you a story now because I think it was true, but I don't know. Because it went round the battalion. It was also that strong that in actual battle, at one occasion, our old man got out of his tent with his revolver drawn and ordered the buggers back into it, you know. But nevertheless, You understand, I said this early on, if a man was frightened, we didn't condemn him. That's the way he was built. It wasn't for him to stab our own, but we'd suffer him and we'd look after him. And we did that. So fair enough, I mean, they're all American, our guys, we looked after him. By the way, as I say, why I believed it then was because Colonel Drew was detention room. Remember, he was a stickler. When we came back out of action and subsequently went on leave to Cairo, again, there was only a dozen there, but you saw the whole American army there. Yeah, when we had to run those sites and we got it. And of course, we just couldn't stand this. And there was fists flying between our chaps and these Americans. And of course, the Red Caps came in, and of course, the Red Cap on a charge has to go through. And so when they went in front of the colonel, they got. Now I'm talking about a stickler for discipline. Mind you, he was fair. He was, but he was a stickler for discipline. And he said, I'm giving you whatever punishment you're going to give the two of us caught. I forget the punishment now, which I'm giving you the full lot. He said, for such ridiculous behaviour. Oh, no, not for bashing them. It's for being caught by a Red Cap captain bashing the Americans. So that was the sort of, that was the American. They went back, of course.
And this is your first brush with them?
That's the first brush.
And they'd actually gone into action with you?
They had gone into action. I don't think you'll find that in any history book. They were in action. Not what I heard, what I've seen.
But in effect, they particularly found it just too much, and they were sabotaging their machines, were they? So they couldn't go in.
The main petrol tank in the opposition and hammer marked. Now, how can you? Contact breakers at points on both magnetos, not the one, adjusted shut. I mean, you can expect them open, or the way of open, but not shut. We saw it, told me to say that, and this is about the first time I mentioned this sort of thing, The other thing, of course, was that now coming to when we come out of the Battle of Sippen Zee, was that, again, this is hearsay. I have no reason to disbelieve it, I think it's true. But my sergeant got mentioned in dispatches, my corporal got mentioned in dispatches, and I didn't. I got my first tape. that meant wages. And I remember joking at the time, saying, "Oh, you got nothing, I got money."
Were the Americans making you aware that they were better off than you were? Better paid?
Yes, but I think they were trying to be friendly. The American nation and the English nation are completely apart. The makeup was completely different. And I'm quite sure, thinking back, that they weren't trying to belittle us at all. They were saying, "Right, well, we've got a lot of money, and come on, bud, let's be friends. Your friends." That was my first. After seeing Errol Flynn on pictures and what have you, that was my first real rush with the American, and I'm afraid I was very disappointed, disillusioned, and I never got over that disillusion.
We were talking about Leaguers and what the jobs you had to do during the action that you were in. And this was the Battle of Sidi Rezegh. Were the results of those actions coming through to you? Because you never really got into the first, in amongst the tank battles, did you?
Yes, we did.
What are your memories of that, of the actual fighting that was going on around you?
Yes. And where we are, you see, being in A echelon, you had to be as close to them. In fact, ideally, you go along with the tanks, but of course, you'll very soon be knocked out. So you had to be as close to the tanks as possible. And there's a tank battle, especially in a desert tank battle, is very mobile. You're forever moving from wadi to wadi, as it were. Sometimes you were quite a distance away, and that was the most dangerous part of our position. Now, that's a funny thing to say. The nearer the tanks we were, the better, but the further away, the reason being that if say, Jerry was firing at our tanks, and then we were back here all in a line, if we were close to the tanks, he's sending AP over, which is high velocity. Now, if it misses it, it just passes you as well. But if you're further back, the losing of velocity, and we call overs. And we lost a petrol truck driver that way. He was, thank goodness it did, so he was lying on top of me, piling 4 gallon petrol cans for his area. And a big, I think about 110 millimeter, hit the ridge. We were way back, hit the ridge, bounced, plowed through the roof of his cab, and landed on his lap, broke his legs. And it was there on his lap. And we had to sort of gingerly pick this damn thing up, put our wheels over it, of course, and carefully put on the ground and what have you, and get him to the ambulance. He died on the way back to the CCS, unfortunately. I think some shock more than anything. It's very close.
With tanks milling around, firing and being fired at, in your situation, do you go to one that's knocked out, kind of unannounced? You look out for knocked out ones?
We are in a valley. Well, actually, we can hear, but we can't see a great deal. Unless put your head above the ridge or whatever. You can't see a great deal at all. The noise is there, and there's one way of putting it. It's all there. Keeps you awake, unfortunately, because we were working all during the night and keeping awake. But also, we occasionally get that close to our tanks, they were getting into a hold down position. And that, of course, when they send for us, hey, the clutch is slipping, and well, I think we're going to be here. So, just the old clutch or what have you, the thing there. And I've heard one tank commander say, we've been sent in here to get the New Zealand infantry out. And we got in there and called them, and the buggers won't come out, they're still waiting. the Anzacs, as I say, they were really good fighters,
How were you getting damaged tanks out or away from the battlefield so you could work on them?
You didn't. Put it this way, we were the AA or the RAC road scouts rather than the workshop technicians, which of course are still RAOC at the back of the university, which was further back. If a tank was not knocked out and you couldn't repair, you got away from it. It's a gone, I actually did have one occasion where they were called up. The driver said he couldn't, his accelerator pedal, something the matter with it. And nothing the matter was with the tank. Anyway, I got up and it was a bit quiet. Jerry was, I didn't see him actually, but he was certainly there somewhere. And it was my turn to go to the tank, whereas Laurie stayed and did beating the brackets, to carry on beating brackets as there was anything coming over. And the tank commander said, told me that the driver said, try it. No, the engine was just ticking over and nothing would happen. And I looked, opened the back doors, and I got to the, I could rev it up. I saw your rod is, he said, well, we can't stop here and things are getting hot now. I said, well, Rachel, I'll hang on with one hand. I said, tell your driver, because I couldn't hear me, tell your driver to put in reverse gear and you guide him, of course, and I'll you know, rev up, and when he's the rev, let the clutch in, and I'll really rev up. And I hung on like that, and I got it right the way back, and down to the hall, just about thinking about give myself pneumonia 3 or 4. We loaded up through with pleasant. I should have put the gas mask on before I did this, but of course, you don't, you think of these things afterwards. But God, I was spitting up sand for weeks after that, and I'd do, well, it would only be, what, a couple of 100 yards. But, you know, I'd scream at tank, and I'd go, oh, come on. And of course, if I slipped off of it, I would have known me.
When the battle subsides, or night time, did you have the means for getting tanks off the battlefield for repair?
No.
You didn't have those large transporter type carrier things at this point in time?
Yes, no, this was a... actually, if I can quote Major Maxley, the reason that one of the major reasons why the British won the Battle of Cyprizae was through recovery. And as I just mentioned, there's no such thing, there was no, we had a big Scammel, 6-wheel Scammel, LAD, light aid division. They would help us tow tanks off and what have you, you know. If they were worth towing off, I've got photographs of them. But if they weren't, we just left them.
But these weren't the recovery vehicles that were to come along later.
Oh, no, no, no. As I say, we would, for instance, the driver would report the engines keep missing, in other words, ignition. We would do, like, change the magnetos at night time. We couldn't do that in the battle, in the battlefield. In any case, you can't say, hey, have you got a spare? Incidentally, another thing, I think I've mentioned this before, I'm not sure, but Jerry, of course, lost a lot of it. That's why he lost the battle, because he didn't recover his vehicle, and we did. And that was a factor that, won the battle. Not only that, when he left his vehicle, we went there and pitched his spanners, because his metric spanners fitted the SAE or the American tanks.
Did he booby trap his damaged tanks if he couldn't move them?
No, not at that time, no. Later on, of course, yes, but not at that time, no.
But Sidi Rezeg itself went on for quite some time, and it was
November until the following February, I think. But we only did, no, that was Operation Crusader, of which the Battle of Sidi Rezeg was the fulcrum point. Because after the Battle of Sidi Rezeg, we, our battalion was doing, we were absolutely exhausted, certainly we three were exhausted. And we went back, where else but to Beni Yusuf. We went out in the morning and come back at night time, like a 9-to-5 job, as it were. And incidentally, right at the beginning of the Battle of Sidi Rezeg, my battalion's technical officer, obviously, put in an issue in for more fitters, because we lost that many. And that request was duly honoured when we got back to Beni Yusuf. They were all fresh out from England, by the way, the reinforcements. And we, as I sort of wrote in one of the talks, and we three, at last, slowly walked into the sunset. Or rather, the other way, to Cairo.
You would hear in early December that America was in the war.
Yeah.
What result did that have? Did it lift your spirits?
That certainly lift our spirits. Oh, yes. The poor showing of the Americans. Well, there's only a few. We can't judge a whole nation on that. And some are not great, the Americans, you know. What was the saying? Is that we British will fight this war to the last Russian soldier and the last American tank.
So when were you pulled out of the battle?
Before Christmas, because I spent, we got 5 days, 4 or 5 days Christmas, over the Christmas, and I went into Cairo and private cell and what have you, and forgot about the war, because westernized an awful lot of place on that. So I had a real Christmas dinner down there, which incidentally was a very nice way of putting on, I think it 1.5 stone loss in weight that the city of Zipurizade cost me. It cost me nothing else, but it cost me 1.5 stone of working 19 days. Getting at the most, not the least, 2 hours sleep a day. When Colonel Drew actually detailed a man to go around the beach with his sole purpose of keeping us awake when he came to attack, and it's hot in the family. All the other things as well, if there'd been a fatality in the town, because we did lose men there, a shell would come in where you are and really mangle up whoever was in front of us. And it's like getting into a steel butcher's shop, can you imagine it? In fact, there was one occasion there when it had gone through the gunner body, and they'd got him out of the gunner. And the shell spent, but it hit the traversing gear. You remember I told you on the other tip, a traversing gear on a Humming was a mangle. But you had to use that because the free traverse was only a few degrees. And I remember I had to repair that, and I was getting sick. Really, I vomiting with the smell and exhaustion and things well like that. When this local damn bloke on the turret top there, are you awake yet?
Do you get used to scenes like that? Do you grow used to them?
I never did. I would accept them. The first time that I saw that, I had nightmares. I had nightmares later on. But I could never, I could never voluntarily go and deal with a dead body. If he was alive, okay, I'll sort him out of a dead body. I'd never volunteer. I would obey orders. I was not soldier to do that, but I'd never volunteer at all. No, I still can't. I just...
The hotels that you mentioned, or the hotel you mentioned to, that you went in Egypt, was this other ranks hotel?
No, just a civilian hotel. Because there was a lot of civilian population. I know. I was with a friend one day, because when we were in Beni Yusuf, we go on a night past our Saturday afternoon past down there. I was walking along with the show, and of course, the language between soldiers. And after all, the ones don't understand English and the heading and what have you, things like that. And I bumped into this very nicely dressed woman. Which
I think we've got this story that she spoke to you.
I'm awfully sorry, so she's been about half an inch like, I watched my language after that when I was in Cairo.
Were the entertainments of Cairo similar to Alexandria?
Oh, yes, that was the Burqa, wasn't it, in Alexandria? But I'll tell you what, I was very disappointed in, and that I'm not sure whether that they cancelled or whether it was shut down for the war, but I never got to the opera in Cairo. Where I did get, though, was the Museum of Hygiene, and I saw some results of the Burqa in there, I can assure you. Various little museums around the place, up at the Citizen. You had to be careful, though, because you could be waylaid. They weren't interested in you, they were interested in your weapons you carry, you see.
And you had to carry weapons in Cairo, did you?
Occasionally, yes. I think they finished this, because you went on some gangs in any case. Oh, I must tell you this happened as well. Later on, we had to get back to, Abbasia Malik's, because that was very much later on. And so we get a tram, and we were tanked up, four of us. We hijacked the tram. That's long before the fashion came in for aeroplanes. We hijacked, put the driver off. You know, we were really terribly racist. We were. Can you imagine? I used to drive a lorry occasionally in Cairo, and the policeman on duty with his plant pot hat, you know, and put his hand up, and you just ignore him. You knock his plant pot hat on duty. You can't stop me. You're blacking on us, so and so. Can you? You know, really dreadful.